the copyrighted program created by the Rio Grande Oil Company.
Los Angeles Police calling all cars, attention all cars, broadcast 98. Check all construction jobs in your district for missing dynamite. Any information for Captain Wolf or the Arson Bureau of the Fire Department. That's all. Rolls and questions.
And follow the fire engine.
Well, I guess I could keep up with them, all right. I use the same gasoline those fire engines do, Rio Grande crack.
Oh, so you're another Rio Grande fan, are you? I thought that was the gasoline the police cars use. You don't mean to tell me that fire engines use it, too.
Well, Rio Grande advertises that everywhere crack gasoline is sold, it powers more fire engines, police cars, and emergency equipment than any other brand. I guess they couldn't say that year after year unless it was true.
You know, I've heard a lot of talk about that Rio Grande crack gasoline. Do you really think it's any different?
Yes, I don't know. They've got something in that patented cracking process of theirs that you can't get in any other gasoline. I used to use the cheapest gasoline I could buy. And
I do.
Then I decided I wanted to experience some of that police car performance Rio Grande advertised. So I started using Rio Grande cracked gasoline last year. And I certainly get more for my money than ever before.
Every motorist who drives into a Rio Grande station gets the biggest value in gasoline history. Listen at the end of tonight's program for Rio Grande's free gift offer. And now it is our privilege to introduce Captain Paul Wolf of the Los Angeles Fire Department.
Although fire prevention campaigns deal with the unknown and careless causes of fires, there is another kind of fire which causes more death and a greater loss than carelessness. I think it is just as important to stress and bring home to the public the crime of arson. Statistics show us that 16,000 lives are lost every year in the United States by fire, and I am safe in saying that one-fourth of that number, or 4,000 people, die as a result of criminally set fires. And while arson is one of the most contemptible types of crimes, it is nevertheless a crime which is resorted to by some of our so-called better class of people. Arson fires are responsible for the loss of lives of a great number of firemen due to the dangerous substances which are involved in setting such fires, and it should be the patriotic duty of any citizen observing suspicious circumstances in connection with a fire to report same to the authorities. Further, you never know when a crime of this type may be committed in the building next door to you or your loved ones, exposing them unnecessarily to danger.
Reporting from the park at the corner of Temple and Fodry at 3:55 a.m.
Okay, Adam.
Anything for me?
Nope. Everything's quiet.
Say, George, what date's today?
June 17th, 1926. Why?
Just counting the days until my girl gets back from Frisco.
You got nothing better to do?
Not on this beat. Nothing ever happens around here. Hey, wait a minute. Did you hear that?
What?
Sounded like an explosion.
Oh, you're
there goes another one. It's in the while away theater across the street. Turn in the alarm, will you, Sarge? And I'll get right over there.
Okay.
Your move, Eddie.
You're crazy. It's your move.
Now, wait a minute. Didn't you just move that piece over there to here?
I did not.
Now, look, I don't want to seem nasty about this, but it's your move.
Well, if that's the only way you can beat me, I wash my hands of the whole game. Cheaters never prosper.
Oh, are you calling me a cheater?
I'm telling you that's your move, and what's more...
Hey, wait a minute. Four. Four. Six. Six, that's us.
It's a goal, boy.
Thank you.
dynamite in the burning building results in a hurried phone call to Captain Wolf, chief of the Los Angeles arson squad. Arriving at the scene of the fire within 15 minutes, Captain Wolf finds the theater building still burning. Disregarding personal safety, his first thought is to save as much evidence as possible before the fire completely consumes the building. Rushing upstairs, he is met by a scene of utter confusion.
This room must be used for some sort of garage meeting. Nothing left now.
Nothing but fire. Where was the dynamite found?
Here in the janitor's closet. The boys got it out, took it over on the vacant lot next door.
Captain, I just found another plant of dynamite.
Where?
Down the candy store in the character.
Come on, boys, we got to work fast. Probably a lot more of that stuff around here, and we've got to find it before the fire does. Savage, come in.
Yes, sir.
You boys fix this for and keep your eyes peeled.
Yes, sir.
If you find anything, get it out of here and get it out of here fast. Katzenberg.
Yes, sir.
You and Jones better go through the main floor.
Right.
I'll be down the candy store. I got a hunch there might be something interesting down there.
Well, I can't see why that stuff didn't go off before they found it.
None of my funny stuff. Can't depend on what it's going to do. Been plenty of it that did go from the looks of that projection room in the lodge hall. Through the floor and out the wall.
Yeah, well, here's the candy store. And would you look at that floor?
Gasoline all over the floor. Whoever planned this job didn't intend there should be anything left when he got through.
Well, we had to bust in the front door, Captain. When we got in, we found the back door open. Looks like somebody come in that way. And there was a hole cut in the door just below the lock.
Back door, eh? Huh? Let's take a look at it. This the one?
Yes, sir. That's the one.
That's the way they entered, all right.
Hey, wait a minute. Did you say this is the way that door was when you found it?
Yes, sir, that's it. Just like it is. Open and propped against the wall.
Well, then there's something mighty funny about this whole thing.
What do you mean?
Well, take a look at these shoes here behind the door.
Yeah?
Well, there's chips in this door in them. If whoever did this cut through their door to reach a key on the inside, how could the chips get in a pair of shoes over here by the wall?
Well, I guess you're right, Cato.
Yeah, and what does that tell to you, Wolf?
The same thing you're thinking. An inside job.
Exactly. And now the thing to do is to find the proprietor of this place and see what he has to say.
What's your name?
George Stimley.
You're the proprietor of the store in the Wild Away Theater building?
Yes, right.
What kind of a business do you conduct there?
Well, high screen, parlor, delicatessen, and the lunchroom.
What nationality are you, Stanley?
Polish.
Stanley, your right name?
Well, my whole name is Stanislavski, but I changed it to Stanley so the people in this country could pronounce it.
I see. And are you a citizen of the United States or are you on passport?
Passport.
You realize, don't you, that the reason we're questioning you is to clear up a situation which surrounds the attempted burning of a building where your business is located?
Yes, sir.
And do you realize that you're suspected of being one of the men implicated in it?
Well, I may be suspected. Why not?
Well, now, when did you first get to the scene of the fire?
Well, my landlord brought me about 5 o'clock.
And when you arrived there, did you go in your store?
No, sir.
Tell me, Stanley, how do you lock your place when you go home?
Always from the back. I turn the key in the back door and then leave to the front door.
And when you close that back door, Lars, did you put anything against it?
No, sir.
And whose shoes did we find behind it?
I ain't got no shoes there.
Well, whose shoes might they be?
I don't know.
Have you anyone working for you?
Yes. Abel Finley.
Did he have a key to the store?
No, not even my wife has a key. Only me.
Now, how do you explain the fact that in your store we found gasoline on the floor and in a barrel out in back of the porch, and dynamite on the cash register, behind the jars on a shelf and in the icebox, totaling 76 sticks with taps and fuses?
I can't say. I don't know anything about them.
Does it mean anything to you that we found that the window in your store had been jimmied with the same tool that was used to cut a hole in your back door, and that the tool we found was one that was found in your house? A meat cleaver found in your kitchen?
Tell you, I don't know anything about it.
All right, you can go now, Stanley. There's a few things I want to check on before I ask anything more from you. In the meantime, I think if I were you, I'd think it over and see if there isn't something you've forgotten.
Allowing Stanley time to think things over in silence, Captain Cato has numerous witnesses brought before him. The result of his investigation now?
Now, would you tell me exactly what you saw, Mr. Gantler?
Well, my wife and I awakened at the first explosion. They looked across the street. They live right opposite the theater building. My wife said, look, John, the theater's on fire. I jumped up and looked out the window. Sure enough, flames were shooting out of the skylight on the top of the building. And I was just about to get dressed and go over when I saw a man come running out from behind the building and run down the alley.
You get a good look at this man?
Well, I couldn't see his features, but I know he was a stocky fella. He's about 5'7" or so. And he was running like the very devil.
Thank you, Mr. Gaffer. I appreciate your coming to me with this information. It might help a lot.
The George family never had a car before. But the last 5 days, he's been driving around in a Ford sedan. It seems mighty funny to me. Then, of course, I never would have mentioned a word about it, excepting for this fire thing and your suspecting him of having done it and all. I hope you won't think me a busybody, Mr. Cato.
Oh, no, not at all, Mrs.
Waller, Edith Waller.
Well, Mrs. Waller, I'm glad you brought this up. It's a very important point, and thank you.
Oh, that's all right. Thank you.
Thus, from the testimony of many witnesses, the finger of guilt points more accurately at George Stanley every moment. Meanwhile, Captain Enos, battalion chief of the Los Angeles Fire Department, makes his report.
After thoroughly investigating the aspects of this case, it is my conviction that George Stanley and Abel Finley, employed by Stanley, attempted to burn this building.
What's been done about locating the Finley man?
Every police station in all the surrounding towns has been notified to be on the lookout for him. We have a tip that he might be in Tijuana. There are a couple of boys who've gone down there.
You know, this man's got to be bound before we can do a thing to Stanley. Every piece of evidence we have against him is purely circumstantial. You know what the courts will do in that case?
Yes. Throw the whole thing out.
And we can't let that happen. Now, there's only one of two things we can do. Find Finley or get Stanley to talk.
Officers from the Los Angeles Police Department and from the arson squad searched through Tijuana, but not once did they catch sight of the missing Finley. Meanwhile, in the office of Captain Wolf.
Stanley, how do you explain the fact that your helper disappeared so suddenly after the fire?
I don't know anything about him.
In other words, Stanley, you deny having anything to do with this case.
Of course I do.
How much insurance did you have in your property?
Well, about $9,000 worth, including the fixtures.
You think this will cover the loss?
I don't know. I haven't been able to see how much damage was done, but I imagine it will.
Have you ever handled any explosives before?
I have never handled any explosives at all.
Ever have a gun?
No. Hey. I don't know what you're driving at, but I tell you, I don't know anything about this fire, and you can't make me say I do.
It's getting mighty hot under the collar for a fellow that hasn't done anything, Stanley. I was only asking you some routine questions.
Well, I get all nervous with you pumping all this stuff at me. You think I was a criminal.
You might be at that.
What's this?
Never mind, Stanley. I think you heard me well enough.
Once again, Stanley has returned to his cell, and Captain Wolf carries on his investigation. Everything seems to point to Stanley, but nothing definite to be pinned upon him. No actual piece of evidence strong enough to convince a jury. Then, a week after the fire, one of the officers assigned to the investigation returned from San Diego with a companion.
Captain Wolf, this is Mr. Garrido.
How do you do, Mr. Garrido? Will you sit down?
Thank you.
This officer tells me that you had some dynamite stolen from your outfit down in San Diego. Is that right?
That's right.
Why didn't you report this to the police when you discovered it?
Well, you see, I was afraid to report it because I was afraid if you want to find out, I'd get fired.
Didn't it strike you that it might be pretty dangerous to have all that dynamite floating around loose?
I don't think of that. I was only afraid for my job.
When did this happen?
June 15th, sometime in the evening.
Have any ideas who did it?
No, only one of my men saw a car hanging around the afternoon. He told me about it, but I don't think anything of it until next day when I find the explosive missing. Then, as I say, I was afraid to report it.
What kind of a car was it?
A Ford sedan.
Did the man say how many people were?
Two men, he say. When he go up to speak to them, they stop the car and drive away.
You realize, don't you, that this is a very serious thing you've done. I'll be reporting the theft as soon as you discovered it. If we'd have known this earlier, we might have had the guilty parties in custody by now.
No, Captain. Honest, Captain, I don't think anything about it when it happened. I was too frightened.
Well, no, he's crying over spilt milk. First thing we've got to do is check every rental lot and find who rented a Ford sedan on that day.
You're the manager, and if I am,
the man is
find out who rented the Ford sedan on or about June 15th. Keep records of this sort of thing?
Yeah, certainly. But there'll be an awful lot of trouble to find out unless you know the name of the party.
That's going to be too bad, then, because I'm going to find out. And if it takes all day, you and me are going over the book until we do.
But there's your reason for me yet.
Maybe this will help. You see this bad?
Hey, Tupper, but certainly we can look through the books. Yeah, it's a pleasure. If you'll come into my office.
All right.
Have a seat?
Yeah.
Cigar?
Sure. Don't mind if I do.
I got the books right here now. Now, when did you say it was you wanted to know about?
June 15th. Right around there.
June. Let me see now. April, May. Here we are. June. 12, 13, 16.
How about it? See anything like it?
Chrysler, Ford, Roach. Wait a minute. Did you say a Ford sedan?
Yeah.
Here's one that ended on the Pentateuch. It's the only Ford sedan we got.
How long is it out?
Let's see, from the 10th till the morning of the 17th.
Yeah, that's just about right. You got any way of giving me a description of the party who rented it?
Yeah, I remember him. His name, he said, was Zygmunt.
Zygmunt? What did he look like?
Well, as I remember, he had a bum arm. But he seemed to be able to drive all right. And he had a driver's license.
Did he leave any address?
Yeah, right in the book. 25, 26 Stample Street.
Oh, yeah, that's the baby we want. How far has the car been driven?
Let's see. Out at 31,000, in at 31,650.
That's quite a bit of mileage for 1 week's driving, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, quite a bit. But when people rent cars, they seem to drive more than they would their own. I guess they want to get their money's worth or something.
Yeah, I guess that's right. Well, thanks a lot. Well, you've been a great help.
Sure, anything to help the law. If you ever want to rent a good car, don't forget this place. We got the best prices in town.
Okay, partner, I'll remember that. So long.
Goodbye. Call again.
What'd you drive in that rented Ford sedan, Sammy?
What? I don't know what you're talking about.
You mean you didn't rent a Ford car on June 10th and keep it 7 days?
I did not.
Defending?
I don't know. I didn't see it.
Sammy? But your neighbors tell me you're riding around in one for about a week before the fire.
It's all a frame-up, I tell you. I never heard before.
How do you explain the fact that there was a Ford sedan answering the description of one you were seen riding in rented on June 10th? If the address was your place of business.
I don't know. Maybe Jimmy rented it, but I didn't.
All right, Sammy, you go right ahead and deny the whole thing of the order. And I'll tell you this. We're building a pretty good case against you. Very shortly, we're going to have enough to bring you into court. When we do, you're going to have an awful lot of things to explain away, and that's not going to be too easy.
Checking the description of the man who rented the car with descriptions of the missing criminal, police are certain that the two are the same man. However, nothing positive is found that can link Stanley with the actual crime. Witnesses are questioned, only to say that the man they saw leaving the scene of the fire might have been Stanley, but they can't be sure. The workman from San Diego who saw the two men in the Ford is questioned. He says he thinks he can identify them, but isn't positive. Every piece of evidence in, every clue run down, Captain Wolf, Chief Enos, and Assistant Captain Detective Cato meet in Captain Wolf's office to discuss their plans before bringing the case to trial.
Stanley's guilty as the devil. We all know that. I'm skeptical about our securing the conviction on the evidence we have.
I don't see it on that paper that we had Finley, but he seems to have completely disappeared off the face of the earth. I've had men on his trail ever since the fire, but so far we haven't even gotten one good lead.
His laborer from San Diego can positively identify Stanley, and the stand, you've got a good chance. If he turns out to be another I think so artist, he's gone.
What do you think, Peter? Do we even try to get Finley, or should we go to court with what we've got?
We've no choice. We can't hold Stanley forever on a suspicion charge. He's either guilty or he goes free. But it's got to be one or the other.
You're right. I guess all we can do is to take a chance and hope that the jury sees the case in the right light. I hate to think of this guy getting off scot-free.
Well, you know these juries. I don't know why it is, but for some unknown reason, they seem to consider arson a very funny thing. I don't understand just what they think it is. But I found that most juries have to have absolute proof in an arson case, or they just laugh it off as much as to say, go ahead and burn down another building. Like they have a fire sale.
It is almost that bad, isn't it?
Well, we can only hope that this time we'll get a jury made up of people who realize how serious a fire can be.
July 20th, 1926. Department 22 of the Superior Court. Judge Arthur Peach presiding.
Counsel for the defense, make all his witness.
Thank you, Your Honor. Would Elmer Street take the stand, please?
You solemnly swear the statements you're about to make to the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, or the God.
I do.
State your name.
Elmer Tree.
Mr. Tree, it has been said that on the evening of June 16th, you saw a man running from the scene of an explosion in the Wild Area Theater building on Dental Street. Is that right?
No, sir.
What? You didn't see a man running across the vacant lot?
Not on the evening of the 16th.
And what did you see?
I didn't see anything on that evening. However, on the morning of June the 17th, I saw a man.
Oh, you saw a man on the morning of the 17th. Are you deliberately trying to avoid the questions of this court, Mr. Green?
I object to the counsel and is being called to witness.
Oh, we'll take a more civil tone of the witness, counsel.
Yes, sir. Now, Mr. Green, how far away was this man that you saw running across the vacant lot on the morning of the 17th of June, 1926?
I should say about 20 yards.
Dark?
Fairly so, uh-huh. The moon lit the scene somewhat.
Well, it was dark enough to be uncertain as to the features of any man who might be staying here. 20 or 25 yards away?
I was able to make the man out quite well.
Did you swear to the identity of that man if you saw him again?
I should have to see him to be sure.
That is all. It's Mr. George,
Mr. Foster. Mr. Green, this man you saw, would you tell us a little about his outward features?
Was he tall, short?
I'd say he was about 5 feet 7 or 8, short and fairly stocky.
Mm-hmm. How was he dressed?
Well, he had on a dark suit and a white shirt. I think his coat was open because I could see his shirt front.
You say that he was a foreigner?
I object to this kind of question in your honor, Mr. Jones. That it is too dark for Mr. Green to see that well.
Only trying to establish an identity, Your Honor.
Objection of the rules. And that procedure with it.
I repeat, Mr. Freeze. Did you say this man you saw was a foreigner?
It was my impression that he was, although I couldn't be certain.
Thank you. May I ask the defendant, Lord Stanley, to stand up? Thank you. Now, Mr. Freeze, was the man you saw running across that vacant lot directly after the explosion built something like this man?
Yes, I'd say he was. Mm-hmm.
In fact, Mr. Green, this could be the same man. Not
Your Honor, the counsel is being given.
Well, phrase your question a little differently, counsel.
Mr. Green, could this be the same man?
I believe it could.
That is all. Thank you, Mr. Green.
Just a moment. I'd like to talk to Sam a little.
Very well.
You say you believe it, sir. Now, Mr. Green, just why do you say you believe it, sir?
Why,
Isn't it because you're not sure? Isn't it because you know for a fact that due to the darkness of the night, it would be impossible for you to see this man well enough to say, is this a man?
Why, I suppose to a certain degree that is so.
Thank you, Mr. Green. That will be all.
I should like to call Mrs. Eva Zelda to the stand.
Tell him you swear the statements you're about to make in this court to the truth, the whole truth, and the truth, what you got.
I do.
Take
Mrs. Eva Gelder.
It is indeed, Mrs. Gelder.
Thank you.
Now, Mrs. Gelder, you live on Temple Street, almost opposite the Wiley Theater.
I do.
On the morning of June the 17th, did you notice anything unusual?
No, I should say I did. I thought it'd been another earthquake.
Well, what made you think that, Mrs.
Gelder? Oh, for goodness sake. The old building across the street blew up. If you'd have heard the noise, you'd have known why.
There was an explosion in the building?
Ain't that what I just said?
You knew Mr. Stanley by sight, did you not?
Yeah, I did. And that's him sitting right over there.
You will answer the court's question in the same many times. comment, please, Mrs. Zelda.
Your Honor, I mean.
As I understand it, Mrs. Zelda, you saw Mr. Stanley, the defendant, riding in a Ford sedan for about a week preceding the explosion.
That's right. And what's more, I know positively that Mr. Stanley... Oh, I did you tell him, Judge. Your Honor.
Mrs. Zelda, have you ever seen Mr. Stanley with a Ford sedan before this time?
I have not. Well, he never had one.
Is it of your opinion that Mr. Stanley had rented this car?
It most certainly is.
I object, Your Honor. This is the court of justice, and the opinions of the witness are of no value. I ask that that answer be stricken from the record.
I'm only trying to prove, Your Honor, that the defendant rented this car, drove to San Diego, and with the help of an accomplice, stole the dynamite used in this case.
That is a leading statement. I ask that you will disregard what's been said, that disbelieving and contradicting to the ethics of the Supreme
gentlemen,
Court.
Gentlemen, you'll have to stop or I'll clear the court and call a new jury.
I merely ask, Your Honor, to have the statement just made in this court stricken from the record.
For 9 days, the trial continues. Defense, fighting prosecution, returning the battle. And at the end of the ninth day, the case is given to a jury consisting of 9 women and 3 men. In the jury room, 12 people argue back and forth, pro and con. And finally, 15 hours after they have retired, they return to the courtroom, hopelessly deadlocked. They are dismissed, and a new trial is set for September 17th. But the counsel for the prosecution finds that lack of evidence leaves no hope for a conviction, and asks that the case be dismissed. Thus, through the sympathy of 9 women, George Stanley, alias Grigor Stanislavski, is free to continue in business until such a time as his accomplice, Abel Finley, is found and brought to trial. Then, and only then, will the truth be revealed.
It's too bad that the average person has no opportunity to come in contact with the suffering caused by fire. I feel sure that if the public saw what we in the fire department see daily, its indifference toward the crime of arson would soon change to a feeling of loathing for one who could stoop to such a means of gaining financial aid. The crime of arson carries with it the second highest sentence to be found. Murder, of course, comes first. But arson carries a penalty ranging from 2 to 20 years in the state penitentiary. And in most states, it is impossible for an arson criminal to be paroled. Only through the most minute investigation of incendiary fires can your fire department learn the various ingenious ways that criminals start them. We want to realize that fact. We hope that after hearing our story tonight, the next time you happen to be called for jury duty in an arson case, you will think more carefully before you reach a verdict. For this, too, is fire prevention of the most important kind.
Thank you, Captain Wolf. In presenting this case tonight as a reminder of Fire Prevention Week, we are proud of the fact that your fire department has an amazing record for efficiency. And we're also mighty proud that Rio Grande cracked gasoline has been chosen to power all firefighting equipment of the city of Los Angeles. In fact, the choice of Rio Grande cracked for all police, fire and emergency equipment by the cities of Oakland, Berkeley, Los Angeles, San Diego County, Maricopa County, Arizona, and many other western cities and counties has so aroused public interest in this gasoline that Rio Grande cracked sales to motorists are greater today than ever before. And as a special inducement to get more motorists to try this patented processed gasoline, all Rio Grande dealers are now offering free gifts. Drive up to the Rio Grande cracked gasoline pump. Ask for your free copy of the Calling All Cars News. And there, amid the true detective stories and latest movie news, you will find pictures of 9 free gifts. Take your choice.
They're free.
Police calling all cars, attention all cars. Cancellation broadcast 98. Suspect in this case freed because of lack of evidence. That's all. Roll the case.
Frederick Lindsay, bidding you good night for the Rio Grande Oil Company.